The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. We're going to go, a tad off-topic, although not entirely off-topic today. And we're going to talk about somebody who's been spoken of on this radio station, not this broadcast, but this radio station, Voice of Reason, before. And that talk pricked my interest in the topic. The topic is the philosophy of Martin Heidegger. And when I was in grad school, I had to, in some detail, read the major works of Martin Heidegger, specifically in a Hegelian context. I was a Hegelian in 1995 when I began my doctoral work in Lincoln. And I guess by the end of 96, I had mixed a lot of my work on Hegel with Heidegger, who was both an embracer and a criticizer of the Hegelian view. If you spent a lot of time on Hegel like I have, you could pick up a work like Being and Time and get through it without a ton of difficulty, because Heidegger holds that, anyone who knows Heidegger knows that you have to read Hegel first. And it was Jonathan Bowden of Great Britain who did a talk on New Right Radio, a talk he did in 06 but has been rebroadcast on the station. And Bowden's presentation was very good, and I have this tendency to go in cycles with Heidegger. I'm into him for like a couple of months, and then I forget about it. But Bowden's talk provoked my interest yet again in Heidegger. And what I want to do today is certainly not contradict anything that he said, but I want to supplement what he said. And I would listen to Bowden's speech prior to listening to this, to get somewhat of a foundation, and that Bowden does very well, and I want to appreciate the guys that thank the guys at New Right Radio for broadcasting that. So I'm going to do two things tonight. Number one, I'm going to give a definition of being with a capital B that's at the center of Heidegger's work. And once you give that kind of basic foundation as a supplement to what Bowden has laid down, after the break, I'm going to talk about an essay that doesn't get talked about very much, Heidegger's Building, Dwelling, and Thinking. And I want to say that, it's pretty rare when you come across a piece of writing that really changes everything. But Building, Dwelling, and Thinking is one of those pieces. And so the ultimate conclusion that I want to make is that Heidegger could help us a lot as nationalist Christians. Heidegger wasn't much of a Christian, but I think he can help nationalists and Christians learn to live in this world by building at the local level, of becoming very closely associated with our communities and neighborhoods while still maintaining the idea of struggle. And I want to say that it's that constant tension between becoming at home on the one hand and struggle on the other that makes Heidegger worth reading at all. And so giving the general foundation and then talking about building, dwelling, thinking is what I'm going to do tonight. And hopefully then, including Bowden's work, give a very detailed picture of Heidegger and why he is worth reading today. I do want to warn listeners that you don't just pick up Being in Time. You have to be well schooled in not only Hegel, but in phenomenology in general, in order to understand anything in there. So it's almost like you're better off with secondary sources, to kind of get yourself used to this vocabulary, and then, you can go and read small bits of Being in Time, in pieces. And that's probably the best way to do it. But I think Bowden and myself may serve as a good enough foundation that you can grasp the basic vocabulary and then go and try to read, the material. You're not stupid if you don't get it at first, but when you're dealing with phenomenology, really anything coming from Hegel, you're going to deal with very, very difficult prose. But that's part of our, that's part of our heritage in thought. All right, Heidegger wants to redefine the concept of being. Being in Heidegger's work is both a verb and a noun. I want to say, first of all, that the concept of facticity, the fact that we're surrounded by people and institutions and ideas and cultural norms, the borders among them and between them are very, very blurred. Being is a constant fluid process. Heidegger's problem is that Western ontologies, metaphysics, has largely been attached to discrete, that is to say, separate objects. Western thought has been bound to things, and putting it very simply, Heidegger wants to alter that and put the focus on not only the fluidity of the borders between objects, speaking very generally, but in our relationship to this fluid, this flow of facticity that surrounds us. And he takes all of this under the concept of being and holds that it is the greatest problem and highest abstraction in Western metaphysics. Now, after being comes existence. These two things are not radically separate. In fact, nothing in Heidegger's work is discrete from anything else. They are always bleeding one into another. Heidegger has an essay which I'm not going to be able to get to, but I have substantial lecture notes on it that I took many years ago on his critique of Plato. It's certainly worth reading. His critique of Descartes, however, is just as interesting. What is the problem with Descartes? Heidegger's idea really is not original. The attacks on Descartes have been fairly regular since the Renaissance. But Heidegger specifically charges him with locking selfhood within the ego that then could impose itself upon objects of thought, like a scientist would in analyzing something, and taking it apart, understanding the pieces, putting the pieces back together again, and then claiming that you understand the object. This is something that Heidegger vehemently reacts against. And when the selfhood is locked up in the ego, there is this danger of what is known as solipsism. Solipsism is really almost a mental condition, almost a pathology that holds that only you exist and facticity surrounding you is just an image, a production of your brain, does not have substantial existence. Now, Heidegger wants to redefine existence in the same way that he wants to redefine being. Existence is being in a certain place at a certain time. It is facticity at its most foundational. We can't help the fact that we are born in a specific century, in a specific year, and are socialized under a certain very specific set of norms and concepts. We have to start from there. We don't have to end there necessarily, although that gets very complicated. The point is, we are thrown into an arena the contours of which are always blurred, but has been constructed by others, and that we are socialized in one way or another to accept. And we have to accept it. The initial acceptance is not a problem. In fact, if anything, it's something healthy. We don't end with mere acceptance, but we have to begin with it. So this means, the payoff here, is that Heidegger is making the statement that for philosophy to be relevant to anybody, it has to be about our day-to-day existence. Being that is, number one, historical, number two, spread out in many different areas of experience, and number three, conditioned to some extent by you. All of these are constantly swirling to create this brand new notion of being, where there are not hard and fast boundaries, not in reality and not in our experience. Our being is something that is not reducible to a series of objects or ideas that surround us at any given time. We're going to come back to this in some detail in his essay, Building, Dwelling, and Thinking, which to some extent is a way, it's almost like a footnote to this concept. The German word Dasein means being there, being in an area, being in an arena that is constructed by others, and yet, given the fact that we're surrounded by all of these things, we still have a certain level of freedom to choose how we perceive these things and how we react to these things that we have not created. And Jonathan Bowden, I think, gives an excellent description of what Dasein is and what its philosophical content is. It's being there, being in a specific place at a specific time with things surrounding us that we need to come to terms with. The fact that there is a subject and an object external to us, that is the creation of the will. That is not necessarily that which exists in and of itself. But subject-object distinction is really the basis on which he will criticize Plato, and with even more vehemence, criticize Descartes. Being is not abstract. In fact, the problem, I mean, he considers this the most abstract thing in the world, and yet from the point of view of our day-to-day experience, it's anything but abstract. In fact, it is very particular. Now, there's some people out there who hold that Heidegger is not an existentialist. In fact, you know, a lot of the secondary literature seems to suggest that. That he is nowhere near a Jean-Paul Sartre or even a Kierkegaard. But there is one element, das Man, this concept of the one, this conformist automaton who simply accepts the world as it is and seeks to be as comfortable as possible within it. That is the least authentic mode of existence. When Heidegger starts talking about that, well, that's where the existential element comes in. The one virtue in all existentialist writing, from Kierkegaard and Dostoevsky, Nietzsche in the 19th century, all the way up to Gabriel Marcel and Sartre, who died only in the 80s. Authenticity or genuineness is the primary virtue. So we have a choice. We're born into facticity and this constant interrelation between our sense of self, and the self is a separate issue. The self is not this hard nugget of egotistical reality in Heidegger. It's nothing of the kind. Self is as much immersed in being as being is immersed in the self. Remember, everything is always fluid. That's not a good or a bad thing. That's just how it is. Everything is fluid. Our being is spread out over our regular arenas of activity. But we have a choice. There is this choice-making thing that we have a certain freedom over, that we either engage facticity critically without ever leaving it entirely, or we work as a slave to it. We identify ourselves with it. It's laziness, it's stupidity. I want to say that this is a very conservative idea, that facticity is something we just can't negate. Sartre wants to say we can negate it entirely. That's not the case with Heidegger. It's something that constitutes the self as much as our self constitutes facticity. The inner, outer, subject, object, these distinctions in Heidegger's world do not really exist. But even the worst critic of facticity still has to take facticity as reality and has to deal with it as reality. That's part of the problem. It's not necessarily a horrible thing, but the day-to-day structures in which we live with, under which we live, these come to constitute not only our personhood, but also our critique of those very same structures. And people like Foucault have taken that very seriously, realizing that power isn't something that the state imposes on you, that naive libertarianism, that there are these wonderful free individuals and then there's this horrible state. Power doesn't really operate that way. Power operates in every experience that we have relative to facticity that turns us into a subject, something to be analyzed and dissected like a doctor or a psychiatrist. The state is only one rather clumsy part of a humongous power structure that exists in every single institution, and therefore freedom is an act. It's not a state of being, it's an act. It's this constant resistance to the individual becoming a subject in the hands of so-called experts. Okay, Heidegger holds that there are three things that typify this kind of existence. Number one, our moods. I want to say that Heidegger is the first major figure in Western philosophy to take mood seriously. And we should thank him for that. A mood is, in Heidegger's world, a means of being attuned, or the product, I should say, of being attuned to facticity. It's anxiety. The main mood that we have, being forced to live in this modern or postmodern world, is angst, anxiety. This facing death, facing dissolution, the fact that facticity is contingent, very contingent, and even worse, that our relations to facticity are very contingent. They could change at any time. The second is understanding. But understanding in Heidegger is not something scientific. Understanding in Heidegger is really about this constant experience, this constant back and forth identification between our personhood, and I think personhood is better than self here, this personhood, this fluid thing, and the equally fluid so-called external reality. This constant interaction does give us an almost non-quantifiable style of knowledge. We sometimes call it the gut. We have this gut reaction. Well, a gut reaction is really a metaphysical thing. A gut reaction derives from this constant interaction between our own understanding of things and the fluidity of what we think is the outside world. This experience over time gives us the foundation of knowledge. And lastly, the idea of speech. Speech in Heidegger is just as fluid as any other concept. Speech doesn't just mean words. It doesn't just mean oratory. It also means our general sense of reaction to people and institutions surrounding us. Our posture, so to speak. Our intonation. And maybe how it is that we rebel against some of these institutions. Being sullen, being withdrawn as a mode of rebellion, as a mode of struggle. So, I want to say that in all of these modes of attunement, as well as in the definition of being in existence, everything is fluid, everything is contextual, there are no hard and fast boundaries. But we need to be aware, from an ethical point of view, we need to be aware of one thing. We need to be aware that these institutions and ideas and people can seek to control us, for better or for worse. We need to be cognizant of that. Heidegger is only an existentialist in the sense that he believes that we do have the ability to create our own personhood relative to and because of the institutions and ideas that surround us. Things are contingent because they exist in time. They'll be here one day and they'll be gone another day. Which is another way of saying that the idea of death is always in front of our face. This is a very orthodox concept, by the way. The constant remembrance of death isn't just an idea that you are to die, but that everything around you is to die. Everything you think is so important will be gone at a certain point in time, maybe very, very soon. The personality overcomes this anxiety that is connected to contingency. But we overcome this by seeing oneself, first of all, as a historical project. We are a part of something. We are a part of a movement. We are a part of a world, a life of rebellion. We need, second of all, to get roots. You know, this is something that I've been talking about in this show in terms of agrarianism. To find a real community that you could become a part of, that you can love. That doesn't mean you like everything they do, but, you know, I mean, we're married guys and we don't necessarily like everything our wives do, or our fathers-in-law, does on a daily basis, but it doesn't affect the fact that we love these people. The community of which we're a part, we need to take our identity as much from the community as the community takes their identity from us. We are in time, and we need to recognize it. We need to have full knowledge of the contingency of what we do, and to begin thinking subspecies aeternus, the concept, the mind of eternity. It was Plato in Heidegger's world that took objects as abstract, external things, removing them from context, removing them from history, and viewing them the way Descartes did, as some eternal thing, as some unchanging thing. And in the mind of God, we could make that claim. However, in our day-to-day life with people, it's a different matter altogether. And one of the reasons I became very interested in Hegel years ago was that I realized that Plato needed to be historicized, that the forms are things that can manifest themselves slowly over time relative to us, not relative to themselves. They could be perfectly static and true in and of themselves. That's not really the point. The point is, what about humanity? And in humanity's case, we're talking about their slow unveiling over time via the day-to-day practice of human beings. The object as this abstract thing needs to be overcome. The will to power, the will to dominate and control, was Nietzsche's idea, and maybe we'll talk about him some other time, but Heidegger was very interested in this idea of being overtaking objectification. Knowledge does not mean dominance. Objects is not the same thing as being. an object may be a subset of being but cannot exhaust being. Even if you took every single object in the world, that still would not exhaust the concept of being, because you forget, first of all, their constant interrelation, and second of all, their constant interrelation with you. It ends up being a swirl of sensation and action rather than stiff, objective ideas of being. Now, we got to take a break now, but this really is the central idea of Heidegger. Bowden does a good job also of dealing with some of these topics. When we come back, I want to talk about the solution to the problem of being relative to one single essay of Heidegger that deserves more attention than it gets, a building, dwelling, and thinking. So we'll be right back. Hang in there.
Don't go away, because there's more to come on the Orthodox Nationalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Return to the Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Okay, welcome back to the Orthodox Nationalist. We're talking about Martin Heidegger, and we have just finished dealing with the foundations of Heidegger's philosophy relative to both being and existence. Now, I want to talk about something that no one really talks about much anymore, and it's an essay of his called Building, Dwelling, and Thinking. It's a solution to the problem of being that we have just laid out. What we're talking about here is the metaphysics of place. The fact that our neighborhoods and communities and these people and institutions, the landscape, the weather patterns, everything else within the area that we live or that we're born and raised, this is not necessarily separate from us. It has, in fact, helped create us. We can impact it somewhat, but it has helped create us. It is not this thing that is just an object in the distance. Real community, real neighborhood is something that is internalized as well as externalized. For Heidegger, to dwell. Dwelling is to find peace, to remain stable, to be preserved from harm. It's a real community where people look out for each other. These institutions and concepts reflect who you are, partially because they helped create who you are. Now, you're still a free agent relative to these institutions, but a real healthy community is one connected organically to the basic values and concepts of the people and institutions and ideas that make it up. To dwell is to live in within an extended family. But the reality is that building comes from dwelling. You find this community that can work, as many of us who moved out into the country to find this, and in my case, I succeeded in finding it. We realize that, of course, that we need to continue to work to maintain it, to build up its strong points and harm its weak points. Building comes from dwelling and not the other way around. But that's classic. That's typical Heidegger. Our selfhood is something that is constructed. That does not eliminate our freedom, but it does limit what we're capable of doing. Now, something mysterious in this essay, he wants to say that there are four elements to the concept of dwelling. Number one, the earth. This is stability. This is the land. This is agriculture. This is place. Deserts create different personalities than beach environments. The plains of Nebraska create different personalities than in the mountains of southern Pennsylvania. The earth is that stable element. It's that stable sense of topography and the institutions that have grown up relative to that topography. The second is the sky or air. I mean, clearly Heidegger is giving a new set of definitions to the four elements of the ancient world. Sky or air, heavens, freedom, purpose, unfolding, the presence of the spirit, even if you don't believe in orthodoxy, I mean, the spirit of the place, what it really means, that it's larger than the physical institutions, one way or another. Number three, the religious structure of the place, its values, its spirit, its world. And lastly, death. And specifically, the commemoration of those who have died. The fact that just because someone dies doesn't mean that their influence still isn't present. Their influence is very present. It could be positive, it could be negative, but there's no denying that it exists. So, these four things, in a specific arrangement, growing up organically throughout time, this creates dwelling, this creates community, this creates a place where our selfhood can be protected, partially created, and yet never removes itself from this idea of real criticism, but criticism only within the slow development of these institutions. This is classic Burkean conservatism here. This is Edmund Burke and Johann Herder and even Hegel at their best. You need to start and finish philosophical analysis from this point of view. What are these institutions? What is the topography? What is the ideas? How do people live? How have they lived? How have they dealt with adversity? This is what a community is. It has nothing. And you notice, through this whole thing, I've never made reference to governments or absurd politicians. They're totally irrelevant here. They seek to take dwelling and use it as a way to extract money and influence. That's all a politician is. It's total fraud. No. We're not talking about that garbage. We're talking about how people constitute their very center and why. And so when you read Heidegger, one of the first things that should pop in your head is you got to destroy that television. Because the whole concept of the standardization of what a good person is or what a productive person is. This comes from major media. This comes from the system. No. For Heidegger, real dwelling has to do with, the organic development of these areas. There's nothing less organic and more mechanistic and violent and demented than the television newspaper, combine regime. And especially since the owners of these institutions are aliens. They're Jews for the most part. This is certainly easy enough to look up and verify. These are alien to how our communities have come into existence and how they maintain themselves. So, Heidegger wants to say that there is space, location, and structure. All of this has to do with the creation of personality. And in fact, space is not something that exists. Space is something that is created given the arrangement of buildings, of human activity, human reason in any community. Space is something that can be created. It's not something that's accepted as such. Space can be experienced because different kinds of architecture manipulate space differently. But the architecture has to be very close to the tradition, the topography, the world, the universe of a specific community. And the specific community is the only way that philosophy can ever really work. We're talking about being in its true sense. This is exactly what this essay really is telling us. So, Heidegger wants to say that dwelling, this real extended family community, is really the relationship between you as an individual and how space is created, manipulated, and experienced. So architecture is very important here. Man has a relationship to locations. It's not even so much that Heidegger is rejecting the idea of universality. I want to say that he wants to save it a little bit. But universality is experienced by enculturated individuals very differently than the Platonic idea. The Platonic idea is valid. The problem is how the form, with a capital F, how forms are actually experienced in reality. This is why Hegel was necessary to make greater sense out of Plato. That's why Hegel works. Because Plato dealt with reality very skillfully. The problem is he forgot history. That history is something that creates communities, and that these communities will experience the form of reality differently from place to place. So I've made the argument on this show many times. Nationalism truly can only find a home in the Orthodox faith, because the way that the Orthodox world is organized and has historically been organized is that each linguistic and cultural group deserves its own Orthodox church, controlled by bishops and laity and clergy and everybody else who speaks the language and who loves the tradition. None of that alters the existence of the universal truth of Christ and the canonical norms of the church. It just says that these universal truths will be encapsulated differently from place to place, without altering, of course, the real essential truth. And there's many different customs within the Orthodox world explicating the same truth in different ways. That's why the ethnic traditionalist concept of Orthodoxy works. And no other church has this kind of ethnic, national, and romantic basis. But this is exactly what Heidegger is talking about. We're talking about locations. When we talk about locations, we're talking about the general tradition of the people relative to so many variables. All of these variables are always bleeding one into another. They're always overlapping each other. This is central to Heidegger's work. But locations permit spaces in that the creation of a community has to take into account local conditions. These local conditions manipulate our experience of space and help create a specific culture that in turn helps create us. This is not a bad thing. It doesn't mean that these institutions are always positive. There's always room for alterations, and those alterations are things that we have to constantly struggle to make real. But they're very specific. We're not talking about some grand ideology here. There is no grand ideology in this point of view. A grand ideology is a vulgar abstraction. That's not, we don't experience these abstractions. We don't experience the good. We experience very specific manifestations of the good, and those manifestations exist within a very local context. And without understanding the context, you don't understand the phenomena. And of course, this is one of the justifications and reasons for the development of area studies. We focus on a certain area or a certain idea or a certain topography and the cultures and traditions that it creates. And from an Orthodox point of view, from a Christian point of view, it doesn't do any damage to the universal message of the gospel. In fact, it brings out every nook and cranny of that gospel as it is manifest in different languages and customs and traditions. And there's nothing wrong with this. In fact, there's everything right with it. We're talking about the creation of space. We're talking about the creation of being. We're talking about the creation of healthy, well-adjusted human beings. But this kind of personality is never separate from the topography, is never separate from the metaphysics of place. Think of it this way. You decide that you're sick of the city or the suburbs, and you move to the plains of central Nebraska. I've been there, spent a lot of time there. I know exactly what it's like there. You buy a house. You could buy a house there for like $30,000. You know, you could buy a beautiful house there for like $30,000. Minimal taxes. And you get to know the neighborhood. You get to see that maybe it's a cattle raising environment. A lot of your big names in the area are involved in the sale and care of cattle. A lot of institutions are based on this, economic world. Wealth is measured in those terms. You have some smaller farmers in the periphery of the community. We get together in a couple of institutions downtown on the weekends, and sometimes during the week, it's basically a homogeneous place. Over time, those institutions, that sense of being, will become internalized. After a while, once you become a part of that world, and your children grow up in that world, it is not external anymore. There's nothing external about it. It becomes as much a part of you as you are a part of it. This is what Heidegger is getting at here. The concept that there is a me and then there is a you, that's vulgar. That's not generally the case. That exists only in extreme alienation. No. In a community like this, what we're really talking about is how the external can become internal, and the internal can become external. And as a result, these institutions and ways of life become a part of you. They become a way, this is how you think, this is how you talk. You become a part of the culture. The culture becomes a part of you. Your freedom isn't harmed in any of this, but it finds a home. This is the whole problem with modernity. Your anxiety is substantially lessened by the fact that I am now a part of these people. These people are a part of me. If one of these farmers goes bankrupt and gets taken over by ConAgra or another one of the regime's puppets in agriculture, I'm going to be there to fight. And I'll do whatever I need to do to preserve the integrity of this community. The concept of integrity is both an internal concerning your own world and your relationship to the external world, this community that you're a part of, to the point where that distinction between internal and external doesn't exist anymore. When that distinction doesn't exist anymore, you're home. It's over. You're going to do okay. And if you guys listening to this are alienated from, you know, where you live, the people you live with, then you need to change that. You need to go and build a family in a different location where you can create real, authentic, mutually enriching homogeneous relationships. Homogeneous in the sense that you hold to the same basic structure of life. However you want to consider that. So, this is what Heidegger is talking about. This is the nature of the struggle. The struggle is to remove anxiety, to remove alienation, and creating real dwelling in the sense that Heidegger manifests it and wants to talk about it. And, you know, when you read Heidegger, you read Hegel, and you get Plato. You get really what, and then you read Heidegger and you get Hegel. These three men helped create the best of Western civilization, so to speak. And so I want to leave you with this concept. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank Jonathan Bowden for provoking my interest in this topic again. And I've gone back and forth on Heidegger for many, many years now. And I appreciate that. I think there's going to be a lot more work done on him amongst nationalists in the years to come. And so I want to thank you for listening. And I want to thank the Voice of Reason, as I always do. And God bless, and bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tuned in to Radio Ariel.